Christian Parenting.
Welcome to the Living Wholehearted Podcast. We are Jeff and Tara Mattson, a husband and wife team who is shrinking the integrity gap in our own lives and helping others do the same. I'm a leadership and organizational development coach, and Tara is a licensed marriage and family therapist.
We believe that if you have a following, you are a leader, and how you lead matters. Whether you are leading in the home, work, or community, we are bringing you biblical, clinical, and relational wisdom to help you in every relationship that matters most to you. None of us do this perfectly, but we are leaning into the reality of our humanity and profound wisdom of grace. We decided to air this around the holidays because we know that the holidays can bring up a lot of pain and reminders of loss for those who are either divorcing or have been recently divorced. And this conversation with Brandy is really an important one, where she just shares the insights of what it was like for her to be a high-profile leader who went through a divorce, some wisdom for how she walked through things with her own kiddos, and even just in the public eye, what she was doing to help regulate her own healing. I think you'll get some beautiful insights if this is your story, but also for those of us who are walking with others who are in the midst of struggle and leaning into what they might need. If you've got a friend, someone you're leading, family member who's going through divorce or is recently divorced, to remind us of the compassion and what they might be needing this time of the year. I hope you enjoy. I think you're going to love her. She's a wonderful voice, and her recent book will be a great resource for all of you. So divorce was not the end of her story. For Brandy Wilson, 2016 was the year her husband, a mega church pastor, walked away from their church and their family. As her marriage dissolved, Brandy also lost her church community, her dreams for the future, and a huge part of her identity. She and her three boys began a journey marked by deep grief and suffering, but also hope, freedom, boldness, and peace. Sadly, Brandy's story is far too familiar for many, and one of those reasons we do what we do here at Living Wholehearted, both for prevention and restoration. We're so grateful for her and her story and what she brings to us today.
Brandy Wilson is an author, coach, and speaker who has been in leadership for more than a decade at Leading and Loving It, a nonprofit created to empower women to love life and ministry. Brandy's helped to plant two churches and is passionate about walking alongside single moms and divorced women as they navigate parenting and life. Her latest book is Better Than Okay, Finding Hope and Healing After Your Marriage Ends. Brandy lives with her three sons in Nashville, Tennessee, and Brandy, it's so good to have you with us today. It's great to meet you.
Oh, thanks, guys. I'm super excited to be with you.
Yeah, we hear you're pretty funny, too. So not to put you on the spot, but I think as the listeners, this sounds like a heavy topic, but you're also in reading your book. It was just such a pleasure to see your humor as well in the hard places. So start by telling us a little bit about the younger Brandy. You know, the things as a trained counselor, I can't help myself, but I definitely am always asking about that little girl in all of us. And when you think about that little girl in you, what are parts of those childhood pieces of your story that have shaped who you are today and what you're doing?
Yeah, I grew up in a teeny tiny town in Kentucky called Fredonia, 400 people. We have one store that is very creatively named The Store.
Oh, I
and
love that.
We don't even have a stoplight. There's just like a three-way stop. So I grew up in a super small town, a very rural community. Grandfather was a hog farmer. So all of my childhood was really spent outside riding horses, on four-wheelers, lots of time spent with my brother in creek beds, each of us on a four-wheeler having, you know, just good, fun being outside. And I was raised in the church. I was raised in a very traditional First Baptist church. And my parents were believers and my grandparents were believers. And honestly, there was no divorce. I had one aunt who had gone through a divorce. Everyone else had, you know, stayed married for an extensive amount of time. And one of the things that I feel like was super significant in my childhood was I became best friends with the pastor's daughter at my church. They moved to our town when I was in fifth grade. I was in their home. Gosh, I was in their home, you know, as much as I was in mine at times and her in my home, as much as she was in with her parents. So I did feel like God gave me this little glimpse of behind the scenes of ministry at a pretty young age, how being in ministry impacted the entire family, even though it was her dad's paid position. All five of them were impacted by the fact that they led a church. So I do really see God's sovereignty and kind of just allowing me to get a glimpse behind the scenes at a very young age. Super loving parents. I am definitely the most emotional of my family of origin. So probably, you know, I didn't feel like I fit in necessarily at times because I felt so strongly, whether it's, you know, excitement or if it's sadness. I'm a deep feeler. And that wasn't talked about a ton. And it really wasn't in, you know, childhoods when in the 80s, we didn't talk a ton about emotions. So I think when I left home to go to college and started having more, you know, young adult conversations, it almost felt strange to me when I would hear people, you know, girlfriends in dorm rooms all sitting around and they would say, well, that made me feel da 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 da. And I'm like, oh, you can actually talk about what's going on inside of you. And you know, obviously my parents are wonderful, but it's just not something that I was raised to even understand. So I did move from, you know, living with my parents to college. And then from college, I immediately became a pastor's wife. So I didn't have a ton of time on my own to begin to get to know that inner Brandy until I started getting a lot older. And trying to figure out, like, how can I live a life that is congruent on the inside and also congruent with who I am outwardly. So that really, I think, started a huge identity thing for me. Probably my kids were young and it was that, okay, I am part of this church that's growing. The church is successful. I love being a mom. It's like my dream. I always wanted to be a mom. I love being a mom to boys. But then there was also that, like, okay, and then what's next after this? And where do I kind of fit in this story of what's going on with our church? And so I went through a big identity shift, probably in my late 20s, early 30s, and was pretty content until I went through my divorce and found myself in another identity shift.
Mm. Yeah, you're speaking to a common thread for many people, whether it's the place, the kind of culture we grow up in. Our parents just didn't know how to integrate emotions. But yeah, that's a common thing for many of not knowing how to integrate our emotional part. And then your particular wiring, your naming as being a more emotive person. God does make some of us even more tender and attuned through our senses. So I love that you're aware of that and that it's normal that we often don't even discover that till well into our adult lives, into marriage, into raising kids. So it's very normal. I just want people to hear that. And you're naming something that a lot of us can resonate with.
That's so true. And Brandy, you're a leader and you married a leader. We often get asked how this kind of thing happens and how do we prevent it? We've been at this for a couple decades ourselves, and so it's just a common story. But our listeners are many times wondering that. They might be at the beginning of the journey. They may be in the middle of it. They may be, we're all on a journey. We found that most high-capacity leaders do, though, have unresolved trauma in their stories, and the stress and trauma of leadership exacerbated these wounds. So talk a little bit more about your story as you got in touch with identity and God began leading you in that stage of the journey and what he showed you in looking back.
Yeah, I think, you know, God has always been, I feel like, so gracious to give me the space I needed to figure out who he had created me to be. And that has not necessarily been an easy path. I think it is difficult. You know, we hear ministry is a fishbowl. And I think for a really long time, I was super aware that anything I did would ultimately impact the ministry of the church. So that almost leaves you frozen. Mm-hmm. And I would say I am a leader. I didn't know that about myself initially. That had not necessarily been a role that I had. I'm a 2 on the Enneagram. So I am a really great support system. But as far as my own leadership gifting, I think I initially thought I ended up in leadership by default because I married a leader. So here I am. What does this mean for me if I don't necessarily, I haven't been taught leadership. I haven't, you know, had it modeled in a large church. How does this work out for me? And part of that journey for me was actually leading and loving it, which you guys mentioned in my bio. But I had a situation going on at Cross Point with a staff wife. And I knew as the senior leader's wife, it was probably something that I needed to lean into. And I had met my best friend now. Her name is Lori Wilhite. She's at Central Church in Vegas, Las Vegas, Nevada. And we had met on Twitter, and I actually slid into her DMs and just said, hey, could we possibly have a conversation? We are both pastor's wives of large churches. Maybe you can help me decipher how I need to handle this situation. So we hopped on the phone, and 2 hours later, you know, I remember hanging up and recognizing, like, I'm not, when it comes to friendship, I have lots of friends. I'm surrounded by lots of people. I have mom friends. I have friends we went out with as a couple. I have girlfriends that'll meet me when I need to pick out an outfit for something. But I was super lonely in regards to being a pastor's wife. So that friendship that Lori and I developed, we were just like, how can we give this to other women in ministry who were lonely? And also, you know, no one says, you're going to be a pastor's wife. This is what it looks like to, you know, do a funeral. This is what it looks like to do a hospital visit. This is what it looks like when you, you know, show up to do a baby dedication at the hospital. So how can we just equip these women to, one, be connected into authentic and genuine friendships, because we're all united by the fact that we feel like God has a call on our life to serve him. How can we take this and replicate this for other people? So part of me figuring out how do I fit into the church was just me figuring out how I could lead at leading and loving it and give that gift of connection and empowerment to other women. So, and then through that, I, you know, started to see where my weaknesses were and where my strengths were. And I started to see what are some of the wounds that I have not dealt with in childhood. And it just kind of broadened my scope for me to be able to recognize that some of the things that were going on in my home were not matching up with some of the things that were happening on the platform or even more in leadership meetings. And that was really difficult for me to admit. I did grow up super traditional. I have always served at churches where I'm allowed to define what I want my role to look like. But as far as a husband and wife, I'd grown up pretty traditional, and you just, you know, protected and you kept your mouth shut. So I think I lived a lot of my life thinking, if I'm married to this man who is on stage changing lives, people are telling me, hey, his message saved our marriage, or this series, it, you know, gave me the encouragement to start a business I'd always dreamed of. And I kept hearing this message of how amazing he was, but it wasn't matching up to the person I lived with. So that must mean I'm the weakest link here. I am the problem. So for me, I had to start doing some inner work just to kind of figure out, like, what's going on? What, you know, what patterns have I picked up that are unhealthy that I can repair? And how can I speak into what's going on here? And that was really, you know, a really enlightening season of my life. As I started doing that work is kind of when things started falling apart at the church, and my husband at the time resigned. And it was like life as I knew it just ended overnight. And I know you guys know this as well as I do, that when your life publicly falls apart, it's been falling apart behind the scenes for a really long time. Mm-hmm. So in that resignation of his, you know, he had already moved out a month before that. And I did not want a divorce. I didn't want that to be part of my story. I didn't want that to be part of my kid's story. But I can't believe, I mean, I am just in awe of the graciousness of God and his patience in growing me through that divorce and just showing up for me in big and small ways. And I think the fact that I had started doing that internal work pre-divorce and then continued with a wonderful therapist. I did an intensive at a place called OnSite, which is here in Cumberland Furnace, Tennessee. So did a lot of inner work to be able to tap into, you know, what are the patterns that I had in my family of origin that I might have carried into my parents or into my marriage? You know, what are some of the behaviors that I enabled, thinking I was doing the right thing, thinking that I had to protect one, my husband, and two, the church first, and just really reflect on. And in doing that work, I was shocked with the amount of freedom I felt. And I think that freedom of, I have to figure out what my relationship looks like in regards to God, and I can't do it just based on, you know, riding the successful coattails of a pastor husband or a successful church. So that time of spiritual growth during my divorce was like one of the most beautiful parts of all of it, because it was just me and God. Everything else was gone. I, you know, sold the house. I started over on my own. I kept my kids in the same school. That is the one promise I made, is we'll stay in the same school system. But I was just ready for a fresh start, and I took that freedom and I just ran with it.
There's so many things, Brandy, in my mind is just wanting to mirror back. There's just gold along the way. So what I'm saying is not minimizing the whole of what you're saying. So I'll start presently and work my way back. I'm thinking about the fact that it's 2023 and the divorce is 2016. So to those that are maybe in the pocket of the explosion and not feeling like this is a blessing, I know, Brandy, that I can imagine that's what we do when we look back and we go, if that hadn't happened, I wouldn't be here with you, Lord, and the things that he has taken and turned from ashes to beauty. And that's what your book is really showing through that. So I'm naming that, going, there's been a lot of time, and then you had a community around you. You were intentionally leaning in. And I can hear someone saying, well, that's why I don't want to do my work, because everything will fall apart if I start becoming aware. And I heard you say, but I found more freedom. And the outcome doesn't always look like we want it to look, right? But the managing our lives is so exhausting. And so we have a couple chapters where we talk about that. It's that escapism. You named it, where, you know, everyone loves you at work, but nobody likes you at home, kind of that compartmentalizing that happens. The isolation we talk about in leadership, it's lonely. And you're naming that for a lot of pastors and pastors' wives. It's just, it's a fishbowl. Everybody's watching, and finding just friends is hard to do.
Right.
But you are very intentional and have even created a ministry that is helping pastors' wives do that. There's just so much that you're saying that's so good, how even God prepared you for that.
Tara, not to interrupt you, but just talking about doing that work and how hard it is. I have a girlfriend who has also done a lot of internal work, and we were at lunch not too long ago and basically just said, life was so much easier when before we became self-aware.
Ignorance is bliss.
No, it's just, ignorance is bliss. I mean, that is not true. But at times when you're like, oh, now I have to deal with that. Goodness gracious, haven't I worked enough? I totally understand that.
Yeah. So thank you for sharing those parts of your story.
Brandy, in your book, Better Than Okay, you say that Better Than Okay is not about why my marriage ended. It's about what God chose to do in me as I chose to begin again. And then you say, God transformed the pain and loss into a healthier new life for me and my sons. Divorce wasn't the end of our story, and it won't be for you either. Talk about some of the lessons or principles that you're finding through your journey of divorce and the healing work that God's been doing in your life and how he's been moving.
Yeah. I think, one of the things I talk about in the book is living in his shadow. And I think, you know, once the sun started to shine on my face again, it just felt so good that I kept chasing that. And I think the reality of none of us are ever supposed to live life in the shadow of anyone else. We are here put on this earth to be able to serve God in the way that he's gifted us. And I had forgotten that. And that is something I had to lean in and start rediscovering. And I never wanted to wear the title of divorced pastor's wife, ever. Like I didn't think that would happen to me. I'd been in church since I was, probably 6 weeks old and baptized at a young age and all of that kind of stuff. So I was really in shock that this was the reality that I was having to face. But I also felt very strongly in the midst of this back in the, 2016 you're referencing. I remember it was September of 2016 and nothing around me felt good. And I had way more questions and like zero answers. There were days I didn't want to get out of bed. Depression, definitely set in. I had very high anxiety, some anxiety attacks in the process of that. It was tough. I'm still trying to take care of three kids and I'm trying to, our church was large and it hit the news, it hit the papers, there were blog posts written. So I'm trying to protect my kids and make my nest really tight at this point. But I remember one day just having this moment where I acknowledged nothing around me feels good. However, I know God is good. So how can I find God in the midst of what is going on in my life that's good is the last thing we would use to describe it. And I pulled a little journal off of, probably a freebie journal off of my shelf. And I took an orange Sharpie and I just wrote focus on the good on the front of it and made myself start listing five things every night before I went to bed that felt good or where I saw God's goodness during that day, whether it's like a sunset or, having ice cream on the porch with my kids. I even remember on a very desperate day, I bought a new hair dryer and I wrote down, I got a new hair dryer. Mm-hmm. And while that's not life changing or maybe direct goodness from God, it was a reminder to me that there would be new things. So for me, I didn't know to call it a gratitude practice at the time, but this really intentional time of being able to look for God in my life, and see his goodness and how he was still at work around me and honestly inside of me as well. That was a game changer for me. It kind of shifted and it doesn't mean that I stopped having bad days. It means I just saw those bad days with a different perspective. And I think, it's so, and when we're walking through times like that, it's so easy to just get stuck in a perspective of hard and frustration and confusion. And, I had laid, face down in my bedroom floor and prayed and prayed and prayed for God to heal and restore my marriage. And in the process, what I realized is that he wanted to heal and restore me. And that has just been one of my biggest lessons of God, just because a title is gone, just because a role that I served in doesn't exist for me anymore, does not mean that I still don't have the call of God on my life, because no one can take away the call of God on my life except for him. And I had a friend say that to me super early on, just that reminder of, man, it is about what God has commissioned me and called me to do, rather than what a title might say I do or what a role might represent in my life.
Hmm. Yeah, thank you, Brandy.
We just want to take a moment to tell you about Living Wholehearted. We are a wonderful team of professional counselors and executive coaches who come alongside leaders helping you live with integrity in every area of your life.
Yeah, so our newest member, executive coach, leadership consultant, Joe. Joe has got over four decades of senior leadership experience. He's a CEO of CEOs in companies like Verizon, American Airlines, Accenture, and others. Joe is, there's not been a fire or a situation that he hasn't experienced in his decades of senior leadership. And so we love having Joe.
Joe brings a quality that I can't bring. I've got a few gray hairs here, but he has a seasoned leadership experience and decades of it. So that's Joe.
Connie has been a writer. She works with women in all sacred and secular spaces. She's got four kids. She knows what it's like to be running a career as well as running a home. And she also has launched churches. She understands ministry and work life. She's an incredible executive coach. Rhonda has 30 plus years working as a pastor herself, and she is spending her retirement working on helping pastors and ministry leaders not only develop leaders in their own systems, but to help with sabbaticals and learn rhythms of rest. So you can find more about our coaches, Rhonda at Living Wholehearted, Connie at Living Wholehearted, Joe at Living Wholehearted, and obviously Jeff and Tara at Living Wholehearted. You can go to livingwholehearted.com to read their full bios. But know that if you are a leader and you're looking for something that's more holistic, not a coach who's going to tell you to do more, but to help you learn and grow from the inside out, both from spiritual formation, trauma-informed mental health, and really evidence-based leadership principles that we know work on the ground floor, we are the organization for you.
Thinking about something you said as I had the title of divorced pastor's wife, and I didn't want that. And how often I hear that as I walked with people, those especially in the church, capital C, there's an extra dose of stigma on that. And just being a divorced woman or a divorced person, and then you had the tag on there of pastor's wife. Talk about, speak to both people, speak to the person listening who feels that same way, and then speak to those around who don't know what that's like and what they can do to come alongside their friends, their sister, their colleague that's struggling with that.
Yes. Yeah, I think, you know, it was, I specifically remember the first time I went to an event post-divorce, and when I introduced myself to someone, they didn't respond back, "Oh, you're pastor so-and-so's ex-wife." Like, it was hockey games. It was, you know, honestly, it was dates. I'd go on and they, "Oh, I used to attend Crosspoint. Really? You're pastor so-and-so's ex-wife." So it really felt like it was coming from everywhere. And I was doing a coaching session with a friend of mine who's a certified coach and licensed therapist. And I was like, "I am so tired. I am so tired of people referring to me as so-and-so's ex-wife or the divorced pastor's wife." And at this point, I'm like probably 3.5 years post-divorce. And he said, "So whose voice do you hear in your head saying that?" And I just had to reflect because I'd gotten to the point where I was the one who kept repeating it to myself. And then I started paying attention to that voice a little bit more closely. And I started realizing that the negative voice I was hearing was the voice of my ex-husband. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was when I heard things like, "I'm a terrible time manager." Well, that's something I had been told. Or, you know, "I'm always putting out fires you create. People like you because of me." When I was hearing those voices in my head, I had to stop and identify it. And I think all of us have a negative voice at some level, whether it's, you know, maybe a coach from childhood baseball who said that you're a terrible athlete, or maybe it's a teacher who said you'd never be smart enough to, you know, get a job. Whatever that voice is, we all have it. So for me, it became identifying it, you know, like a stop, think, pray, like stop. Whose voice is that? Think, that is not the voice I want in my head. And then praying that God replaces that with his own voice. So I think when those titles come at us that we don't like, and we hear those negative voices, divorced pastor's wife, just someone who's divorced, because there's a lot of shame that comes with that. I started noticing the more women that I would meet with, if we were in public, when they would get to the point of their story and they would say, "I'm divorced," they usually drop to a whisper, like, "I got divorced." And then they come back to a regular, and I'm like, "Oh, everyone or most people feel a lot of shame in regards to their marriage failing." So for me, I had to identify what that voice was. And then I started to be super intentional about replacing it with God's voice in my head. And I even stuck post-it notes. I have one still in my bathroom, my primary bathroom, that I see every morning that says, whose voice do I hear? Let it be God's. And that just became the repetition of like, nope, no more of that. I am retraining that neurological pathway to hear the voice of God rather than the voice of negativity. And I will tell you, the people around me, who were watching my life fall apart. I try to be super specific in the book of like, hey, this is what this feels like for the person walking through the divorce, and this is how you can show up for them. And I think there are, you know, lots of ways that we could talk to either church leaders or talk to congregation members. I think one of the things that was super helpful for me is I had a group of friends. On all three of my kids play football. So I have two playing college football and one playing high school football. But when my divorce happened, my oldest son was a sophomore in high school and he was starting. We live in a huge school district. So he's starting as a sophomore. And all of these years I've had people to sit with at the game. I had family to sit with at a game. And I start showing up to this season and I didn't know what it was going to look like. And, you know, through the grace of God and the way he orchestrates, some of those really significant life moments, a couple of other moms who had sons, my son's age, just started reaching out to me like, hey, do you have anyone to sit with tonight? And it ended up over the course of that year, there were six of us, through the course of that season who just kind of connected and we sat together at every single ball game. And one of the gifts they gave me in that is they didn't just say, what do you need on a Friday night? They were super specific in giving me options. Cause I think lots of times when people are walking through trauma, hard things, we don't know what we need. And if we do, you probably can't give it to us. So they were super specific on Friday afternoons. The text thread would start with like, hey, do you want to meet us at the tailgate? And we can eat before we go into the game. Or, hey, do you want us to pick you up to ride to that away game? Or do you want to meet us there in the parking lot? So they were super specific to give me options. And then I got to choose what I was most comfortable with. So that is a super simple, practical way to be able to show up for someone who's walking through anything hard, divorce, death, medical diagnosis, is just to say, hey, like, I'd love to see you and help out. I can bring you dinner and leave it on the porch. I can have you to my house and cook dinner for you. I can come in and cook dinner for you, or we can go to a restaurant. What do you need tonight? And that person gets to feel like they have some decision-making ability still, even though it feels like life has fallen apart for them. When it comes to the church, I really just would love for the church to recognize divorced people in a little bit smoother way than might have, you know, been happening before. I always try to be super clear. When I left Crosspoint was wonderful to me. That is, I talked to a lot of pastors' wives going through divorce, and that is not the case. Crosspoint was wonderful to me. In fact, the staff came and moved the boys and I to the new house we live in. A group of men helped demolish part of the house we live in because my house and I are the same age, so it needed some wrinkle repair. But I think showing up for people and just being, reminding them, like, you're not forgotten, you are still seen, we want you here. Divorced people walk into church and it's like everyone there is married. And you know, my challenge to those people would be reach out to someone you might know there to come and sit with you, or ask if you can sit with them, invite a friend to go with you to visit a new church if that's what's going on in your life. But we are so embarrassed and shamed, feel ashamed, that often it shuts us down and we want to isolate. And that is the worst thing for us. So be brave and continue to try to find points of connection so that you can develop that support system if you don't have it yet.
Man, Brandy, that was really good practical examples that would help people on no matter where they are in that story or around that story with somebody that they care about and want to know how they can actually help or see them and be there and present for them. Love that. As we come to kind of a close of our time together today, I just want to give you a second to think about just maybe that kind of one last piece of encouragement to our listeners, just the listeners that are most connected to your heart beat around this matter, and just something that you can use to lift them up today. Any, just give you a moment to think that, or maybe it just comes right out.
She's ready.
Yeah, take it, girl.
Well, you know, I think there are a couple of things. I think one of the things that was so helpful to me is just the reminder that we are taking one day at a time. When you are walking through, you know, life as you know it ending, you start jumping ahead of what will life look like in 6 months, and how will I pay college tuition for 3 kids, and, you know, will I be alone forever? And we just start jumping ahead to all these scenarios that we don't need to worry about yet. So if we just zoom in and focus on making it through one day at a time, that helps with that that overwhelming sensation that comes with absolutely everything we're trying to figure out. So I know when I was in it, I would wake up in the morning and look at my calendar and think, what are the conversations I need to have today? What are the phone calls I need to make today? You know, what are the tasks on my to-do list I need to get done today? And that became my focus. I could not jump ahead, or I would almost be paralyzed in fear of my future. So I think take one day at a time. When you get to the end of that day and you lay your head on the pillow, celebrate. Made it through this one. Yeah. And I just think to remember in the midst of this, you will come out on the other side, and not to just use my title, but you will be better than okay. We chose that title. That title was chosen because when I talk to women in my position, typically the first question they asked is, will I be okay? And then, will my kids be okay? And I got to the point where I was saying, you're going to be better than okay. It's going to take work, and it is going to be a healing journey. But you put in the work, you cling to God like you never have before, and you will get to a point where you find yourself smiling again. You might find yourself laughing again. You might actually enjoy meeting a friend for lunch rather than dread what questions they might ask you in your time together. But you do the work and keep leaning in, and you will end up living a life that is better than okay. And I think one more thing when it comes to our kids and wondering if our kids will be okay, I always want single moms to remember, like, I might be a single mom, but I am not parenting alone. God is right there parenting with you. And we as parents have to depend on God and trust that He will do His will in our kids' lives. That if we believe He's going to take our suffering and use it as a survival guide for others, or give our, you know, pain purpose, then we have to also believe that He will do the same thing in our kids' lives. Mm,
thank you, Brandy. It just reminds me, I was just having a conversation with a couple different people. So one, you know, just coming to realize that their family of origin is pretty toxic and they just don't have family. And so the idea that God is the father to the fatherless, even though they have a family, they're not there for them in the way a family was meant to be. And then a dear friend who just went through a divorce, it seemed kind of, we were talking about that God is he comes along as the husband and is there. And we were celebrating in just a small little way as she was like trying to fix something in her house and was like, you're my husband, Lord, help me. And sure enough, in that moment, there was this just beautiful coming.
It was a lock.
It was something, but she was just like,
couldn't get it unlocked until she prayed that. And then she turned the key after praying that and he unlocked it.
Yeah. So just the reframing of
that.
And there's so many different places where people let us down and our story isn't how we imagined it. And that yet to your title, you're better than okay, that God, he's going to finish what he started in our stories.
He's going to finish what he started.
So I love your hope, your joy. You can feel it, Brandy, as you talk. So thank you for the gift of this book and the resources and you being courageous to continue to move in this direction. Tell our listeners how they can find you and your book.
Yep. I have a website, lovebrandywilson.com, Brandy with an I. And the book is called Better Than Okay. The website is betterthanokaybook.com. It can be found on Amazon. That's probably the easiest way. We all end up on Amazon. And then on Instagram, I am Love Brandy Wilson as well. And on Facebook, I'm Brandy Wilson. So
I love
pretty easy to find me.
And to ask for all the people who have no time to read a book, but do you have an audio version?
I do, but I didn't have the opportunity to read it. So you don't get my Southern accent.
Okay.
So there's no y'all or anything like that in it. That's all been taken out.
Okay. Disclaimer, if you need the audio, but well, it's been a gift to have you with us. And if you are in ministry, maybe you're a pastor, pastor's wife, you want to do this and you want to do this well and learn how to heal all that stuff and to be a wholehearted leader in all your humanity and honesty, we'd love to walk with you. We have these cohorts where we're walking alongside leaders, emerging leaders and seasoned leaders, and we want to be able to come alongside you no matter where you're at in your story. If you are looking for counseling, we also have professional counselors. They're helping you in the trenches and really helping you get through the day to day. So whether you need the coaching side or you're in the midst of doing your trauma recovery, we're here for you at Living Wholehearted. So go to livingwholehearted.com and you can join our newsletter, and we're offering free resources all the time. It's been a gift to be with you, Brandy.
Thank you, Brandy.
We're so grateful. Mm-hmm. Until next week, be the leader you would follow.
This podcast is powered by Living Wholehearted, Courageous Girls, and the Christian Parenting Podcast Network. Thank you for joining us in this critical movement of shrinking our integrity gaps between what we preach and live.